Welcome to the Oxford Institute of Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and today I'm joined by Tatiana Matrova, who's Director of the Energy Centre Skolkovo Business School and Senior Research Fellow at the OIS. And we're here to talk about Russian gas and Russian gas exports. Welcome to Oxford, Tatiana. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, David.
Why don't we start talking about Russian gas supply to Europe? Now, Gazprom are seeming relaxed about their position in the European gas market. In 2017, we're likely to see another increase of Russian gas supply into the market as demand rebounds and customers seem to be willing to buy Russian gas. Also, of course, you know, Russian gas prices are mirroring Northwest European spot prices. So what are your views?
Well, that's true. Russian gas exports are really increasing, and Gazprom made a big job in adapting its pricing strategy in line with the European. And it is quite competitive. It is increasing. So I understand the reasons for Gazprom to be quite relaxed. At the same time, I'm afraid it's just a temporary relief. And as the new wave of LNG will come to Europe, the competition might become really tough. And then Gazprom will have to do the next round of renegotiations probably, and again adapt its marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. So it's just a short window of opportunity right now to feel relaxed, but then I'm afraid the market will be rather difficult.
Okay, you mentioned the wave of LNG, or this so-called wave of LNG. Now, what is Gazprom, how are they going to counter the strategy and the threat to their traditional markets?
Well, it is. There were lots of speculations about potential price war, gas price war in Europe, mm-hmm. Between Russian pipeline gas and the US LNG. I'm not sure that it's going to happen. At least I don't see any willingness inside Gazprom or Russian government to go for such sort of price war. Its strategy is, as usual, quite reactive, rather adapting to the new reality. And this whole expectation of the LNG wave and oversupply, it is being slightly postponed, which gives some signs for Gazprom that probably it might not happen to such a big extent. Mm-hmm. So probably there is no need to hurry right now to give different concessions and to change its pricing before the real threat evolves. Mm-hmm. So they will adapt, they will use this wait and see approach most likely.
Okay, but do you think that if the wave arrives, do you think that Gazprom will marginal cost to maintain their market share?
Gazprom is still one of the lowest cost producers and suppliers to Europe, mm-hmm. and it has a really good advantage, especially after the ruble devaluation, which made costs to reduce like twice compared to the good old days. So in comparison with the US LNG, for example, or with the majority of the other LNG suppliers, probably except for Qatar, Russia is still the lowest cost supplier. Okay. So it is able to decrease prices. Mm-hmm. Of course, it doesn't want to lose its margins, but if there will be this threat to lose the market share in Europe, I'm sure Gazprom will go for the further price reductions.
And do you think Gazprom is going to face competition from some of the domestic suppliers also looking to, if they get the right to export it to Europe, do you think that's likely?
There is such a discussion ongoing in Russia for several years, and of course such non-Gazprom producers as Rosneft and Novatek, mm-hmm. they are pushing really hard to get access to the export markets because domestic prices with ruble devaluation became very low as well. Yeah. So for them, European market access is like Saint Graal. But at the same time, there is a perception inside the government that it's not timely, that it will create improper competition between the Russian suppliers, mm-hmm. that this will further drop prices and thus decrease revenues of the state budget with lower export duties. So there was a very clear message from the Russian energy minister Novak just recently, like a month ago, stating that we are not regarding this option at the moment. Okay. Probably in several years we will come back to this discussion, but not now.
Not at the moment. Well, looking at Gazprom's position in Europe, we are, of course, in the middle of the DG Comp Gazprom dispute at this particular time. And I just wondered, what is happening? What is your position on that? And also, what's the whole position about the OPOR pipeline capacity usage?
Well, with the DGCOM investigation, I think Gazprom made a very smart move, and the proposal it has submitted to the Commission was it was going basically far beyond everybody's expectations, mm-hmm. because Gazprom declared its willingness and readiness to comply with all the requirements. Furthermore, it has really proposed to move its pricing for the Central and Eastern European consumers to the hub pricing, mm-hmm. which is actually what they were Absolutely. Asked to do.
Yes, exactly.
So here I think that rationale took over, commercial rationale took over all the political disasters.
Yeah.
As for OPAL decision, again, though it is temporary solution, mm-hmm. for the time being, it's a good solution,
yes.
which allows Gazprom to work and to utilize Nord Stream 1 capacities as much as possible.
Right. Okay, well, you mentioned Nord Stream 1. Why don't we just talk for a minute about Nord Stream 2, you know, and ask, you know, will it go ahead? And basically also, do we see that the rush, that the DG Comp investigation, OPAL, Nord Stream 2, is all one issue? You know, how does that work together? And also, where does Ukraine fit with that? Could you give us some clarification?
Yeah, it's definitely one issue, and it's the issue of the European security of supply, it's the issue of Ukrainian transit, yeah. and it's the issue of the regulation of non-EU gas pipelines. It is very complicated. There is a lot of politics involved, especially after the Ukrainian crisis.
Yeah.
So it's quite painful for both sides to find a proper solution. At the same time, I believe that right now we see some positive movements, mm-hmm. especially, you know, with this note from the EU legal department concerning the mandate for the European Commission to negotiate Nord Stream 2.
Yep.
Again, I think that's the voice of rationale,
yep.
first of all.
Yep.
At the same time, I believe that all these political constraints and concerns, especially from the Baltic states, from mm-hmm. Poland, they will keep playing some role, not in terminating the project at all. I don't believe that it will happen, but they might further postpone its construction. So it's not going to be an easy, rosy road. Yeah, there will be some difficulties, there will be some further problems in negotiations, I believe. But at the same time, I think that finally the pipeline will be built,
yeah.
Because it is, first, it is commercially viable,
yeah.
and second, it is really increasing European security of supply.
So therefore, why postpone? You know, why do the certain powers that be want to delay the project when Nord Stream 2 will give additional security capacity for gas supply to Europe?
Well, if you increase supplies through Nord Stream 2, that means more or less automatically decrease of transit through Ukraine and potentially through Poland.
But you'll still need Poland and Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot imagine such a structure of supplies that would allow Gazprom to completely get rid of Ukrainian or Polish transit. But this is the matter of rather significant revenues for these countries, and therefore, of course, they are quite worried about the way how it will proceed.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, as I mentioned, again, political background and all the concerns about Russia-Ukrainian relationship
mm-hmm.
in this respect, in many cases, they are becoming overwhelming for the commercial logics.
Well, let's talk, you've briefly alluded to it, but let's talk for a minute about your views on sanctions that are particularly targeted at new Russian gas pipelines. You know, what are your views on this?
Well, I am extremely worried about the way how this whole story with the sanctions is developing. Just a year ago, nobody could even expect
exactly.
such a tough decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And now here we are, November 28, the sanctions will come into the force.
Yeah.
They are very conditional. It's like an option for the US
it is,
president.
It's the US president's option. He may impose, isn't it, in consultation with European allies as well?
Well, it is written
yep.
about the consultations with the European allies, but look, the whole bill was accepted basically without those consultations.
Yes, okay,
so
yes,
there
yes.
are no guarantees. What this bill does, actually, it is imposing a huge gray zone where we do not know. We understand that there are many risks and we do not know which of these risks are going to materialize.
Yeah.
But anyway, even without any particular decision of the US president, that means automatically already now that all the transaction costs for Gazprom's operations in Europe are increasing, because every counterparty will demand for additional risk premium in case if president might.
But how's this being, that you were in St. Petersburg last week, and so how's this being felt amongst your, you know, your friends in Russia?
Well, people are concerned. Mm-hmm. They are not discussing it openly. Mm-hmm. It's a painful topic. It's a very delicate topic. But at the same time, if you look at, for example, Gazprom's financial disclosure, a recent one, they are mentioning this risk even in their official documents, because mm-hmm. it is there. You cannot avoid it. And mm-hmm. in any negotiations with the banks, for example, you will have it in mind, and the banks will have it in mind, which is most
But it's going to have, I imagine, quite long-lasting implications on the relationships between Europe and Russia.
Yeah, definitely. And look, the way how this bill was approved actually makes it the part of the whole landscape for a very long time.
Yeah.
So it's not a temporary measure. It is there to stay for many years, I'm afraid. And it will dictate this whole relationship being unsafe, associated with lots of threats, and really quite costly for both sides, because it is actually touching also participation of Russian companies in all the joint projects overseas. Yeah. It has many implications in terms of financing different projects, both in Russia and abroad. So it's very, very vague.
It really adds a huge amount of uncertainty on top of all the discussions we've had about the European gas demand and gas supply uncertainties as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk for a minute about the domestic market? Because we've talked now so far about Europe, and you know, there's certainly a lot of talk about a Russian gas bubble. And I just wondered, what is the position on domestic Russian gas demand, you know, and can that really absorb additional Russian gas supply?
I'm afraid no. So the short answer. I mean, first
you've got
to
give us a longer answer than that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one observation. Major part of this gas bubble, it is Gazprom's gas.
Right.
Because Novatek and Rosneft managed to contract all their production. Mm-hmm. So they have customers which will offtake all their gas. And sometimes in some periods of high demand, they are actually seeking additional gas.
Right.
So, but for Gazprom, the spare capacities which are not utilized, they are really huge, and Gazprom has far less room for maneuver. It is not allowed legally to provide price discounts, because as a monopoly it is obliged to supply gas at regulated price.
So when other independents can.
Exactly. So they are basically selling their gas at Gazprom's regulated price minus 5%, for example. Cherry picking the best customers from Gazprom, obviously. And on the demand side, the situation also is not looking very positive because of the whole state of the Russian economy. Mm-hmm. After the decline of the oil prices and financial sanctions, there is overall economic stagnation. So this year we are going to have less than 2% GDP growth in Russia.
Okay.
Previous years we had negative GDP, which means that domestic demand in the industry, in the power generation, is very weak.
Yeah.
So it will slightly increase as the economy will pick up, but unfortunately we do not see any real big drivers for the economic growth inside the country. And so for gas, there are not so many opportunities to expand its market presence. The companies are trying to promote natural gas vehicles, but again, they need huge investments into infrastructure, and we have very strong budget constraints now, so investments are not available. As for the power sector, slow improvement in the efficiency is actually covering all the growth potential for the gas demand. So, yeah, unfortunately, I wouldn't count on the domestic market as potential absorber of this gas glut.
It's interesting because in a meeting in Oxford today, you mentioned that losses in the heat sector can reach up to 30%. And so I just wondered how quickly, you know, can reform increase these efficiencies and reduce these huge losses, which of course would mean less gas demand as well.
Yeah, true. But again, when you have economic stagnation, you do not have access to the international financial market due to the sanctions. Your domestic market, financial market is very weak. That means that you are not able to make huge investments into the renovation, which is slowing down this whole process of the efficiency improvements.
But is there any particular sector which would be relatively low cost to improve the efficiencies, or would it?
Well, there are lots of low-hanging fruits, right. So like simple insulation is already providing very good results.
Right.
Yeah, but with the heat supply sector, which is involving lots of local players, municipalities, and a lot of formalities and local vested interests, it's ongoing very slow. So it is still the sector which hasn't seen reform in Russia yet.
So what factors are there that could actually restore Russian gas demand?
Well, only economic pickup.
It's just economics?
Yeah.
And sanctions, I imagine.
Yeah, sanctions are part of this economic stagnation environment. Yeah.
Just going back to price for a minute, you know, there's currently a nascent gas price exchange in St. Petersburg, the SPYMEX. And I believe it's a bilateral kind of trading floor. And of course, gas prices in Russia continue to be regulated. I just wondered how you see the development of gas pricing in Russia and, you know, what role a SPYMEX can play.
Well, at the moment, as you correctly mentioned, SPYMEX cannot be regarded as a normal gas hub or as a gas exchange. Mm-hmm. It's rather a bilateral trading floor, which allows producers to sell their gas directly to the customers. Mm. The customers are then not allowed to resell this gas.
But they're not?
No.
So it's almost like balancing, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Okay. It is playing the role of a balancing mechanism. Nevertheless, it is producing some price signals, which are at least interesting. Normally, the price is slightly lower than the regulated. Sometimes in winter period of high demand, they are a bit higher than regulated price. I know that some companies like power generators, they started to include this price into their pricing formula.
Right.
So it is already regarded as some sort of a price reference, but there is indeed a very long way to go before it will become a normal liquid spot market, not even saying about futures and other derivatives.
But it has political support, I would imagine.
It has, and Federal Anti-Monopoly Service is really working hard to promote this trading. They are even discussing introduction of obligation for the gas producers to sell like 10-15% of all their gas at the gas exchange. I'm not sure that this will happen, but they are very serious in promoting these gas trades. So it has some role in the domestic market, but don't think that it's like a European style hub. No.
But of course, you know, Russia's so huge, you'll actually have to have several hubs to have a realistic pricing system, but I expect getting the first one going is the most important thing.
Yeah, but those first ones, they are located at the moment in the Western Siberia, not in the areas where the main consumption is located. So again, it's more of a technical trading floor rather than a hub.
Well, we watch with interest on that.
Yeah.
Just staying in the domestic market and perhaps talking about the environment for a few minutes, you know, globally we're seeing a move towards greater renewable power generation as a means to reduce CO2 and particulate pollution. And I just wondered, what is the Russian government's position on the use of renewables?
Well, for a very long period, the government was extremely skeptical about renewables, saying that, look, when we have plenty fossil fuel, cheap fossil fuel, why should we think about that? Yeah. Now the situation is changing for the last couple of years, and the main reason is not fear of the global warming, which is not taken seriously in Russia at all.
Okay.
It's more about local pollution and also about technologies, that if we do not learn right now how to to use these technologies, later on it will be extremely difficult to be in line with the global technological progress. And therefore, there were several auctions for the renewable capacities, primarily wind, which where several foreign companies were involved, like Fortum, for example. And they have an obligation to localize production of this equipment inside Russia. So this is the main driver for all these renewables promotion. And there is a sort of green tariff mechanism imposed, which makes it quite attractive for the producers.
Well, just moving to maybe to the other region of imports of the gas, which is the East, which had a lot of focus as a result of perhaps the traditional market of the West having some difficulties over the last few years. And what's interesting over the recent weeks is the kind of importance that the Power of Siberia pipeline has taken. That's the 38 BCMA pipeline from China, so Russia into China. And now it's targeted to start operations in, I think, December 2019, which is right at the beginning of the target window. So what's suddenly driven the increased attention on this project?
Yeah, that was quite surprising because for the first 2 years after the deal was signed, there were very little moves and progress in the pipeline construction. And it looked like both sides were looking whether it makes sense and they were not in a hurry at all. But I believe that this year, when the Chinese gas demand has shown again double-digit figures, that became a breaking point for the Chinese authorities to really try to speed up the progress. And Gazprom has accepted and promised to deliver by the end of 2019 the whole pipeline and to start
supplies. Will they, do you think?
I think they will. Yeah. It's not technologically that challenging and it's under construction. So according to their schedule, they...
And the Chinese are building some of these sections, aren't they?
They are building the Chinese part in their territory and Gazprom is building the Russian part.
And they're each funding it?
Gazprom is funding Russian side and China is funding its own. There were discussions that potentially China could provide some prepayment, but it didn't happen. It was not fixed in the deal finally.
Now, the gas that's going to be going into that pipeline, I assume it's Gazprom gas, or will other companies get access to that? Will it be third-party arrangements?
Oh, that's a very disputable question. And of course,
that's why I asked it.
So Gazprom is claiming, come on, we have the whole capacity booked already according to our contract for 38 BCM, while Rosneft says, Rosneft has the biggest oil assets in eastern Siberia with a lot of associated gas. So they're saying, look, we have a regulation inside Russia for 100% utilization of the associated gas and primary access to the pipeline system. So you are obliged to provide us this access.
Well, of course, I'm already thinking that 20% of Rosneft shares are now with Chinese companies.
Exactly.
So is that going to push Gazprom to give access, do you think?
Gazprom will resist as long as possible. So it will depend on the political decision of the authorities. Indeed, a Chinese company which acquired these 20% of Rosneft shares, it has mentioned already that they expect to get some of the gas from Rosneft through this pipeline. But I'm not sure how exactly legally this decision will be made. It is unprecedented for Russia.
I think we wait and see on that one.
Yeah.
So that, of course, is the eastern pipeline. Where are we on the western, the Altai pipeline, which is the gas coming from the west? And also, while we're talking about the proposed pipeline from Sakhalin as well.
Well, on Altai pipeline, they keep signing memorandums of understanding, but there is no any visible progress in this project. As for the Sakhalin pipeline, it is also mentioned quite frequently. I think it will be the matter of sanctions, actually.
Really?
So if sanctions will be expanded to the LNG equipment, or if... for example, Japanese companies will not be allowed to finance Gazprom, which could happen if President might. Then the only way to monetize this gas will be to send it to China. So this option is still on the table.
And where are we, actually? You mentioned LNG, you know, on the expansion of Sakhalin Island. You know, do you think Gazprom and Rosneft will work together to encourage new projects?
They don't want to. There was a special request by President Putin ordering them to find a solution to negotiate and to solve this issue, because Rosneft has feed gas, Gazprom has facilities to liquefy it and the pipeline to bring this gas to those facilities, but they cannot agree. There is such a strong rivalry between these two companies that actually so far they didn't manage to solve it.
So nobody's going to bang their heads together?
Yeah. Mm. Well, at the end of the day, probably, but it has to be Putin's personal decision ordering them what to do.
Yeah. Which would be actually for the best for Russia, wouldn't it?
Definitely. It's the most attractive project from the commercial point of view. Mm. So it's the cheapest and the closest to the market.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, we've been chatting now for about 25 minutes or so, and I'd like to end up with a very broad question if I can, and just so you know, we've covered a lot of subjects. So how do you think it's all going to end up? There's lots of variables that are going on, east, west, domestic. You know, where do you think it's going to end up over the next few years?
Look, like in a good fairy tale, they lived happily ever after. I think they will. That we will still work together.
Yeah.
And this cooperation between Russia and Europe, between Russia and China, it is already like inevitable.
Yes.
So there are lots of challenges, there are lots of difficulties, lots of misunderstanding and politics. Our politics, they really destroy a lot of commercial ideas. But at the end of the day, it is so natural and so profitable for everybody that nobody is going to quit.
Tatiana Trevor, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.